What I have noticed is that there has been a change in Job because of the things that he's gone through. He started out early a couple weeks ago when we started. He wished he was never born and that he would have been a miscarriage. He was in despair. He hated life because of the things that have happened to him. If you recall, his children were killed in a maybe a tornado. It knocked the house down on him. His livestock was destroyed by fire or stolen by foreign countries. And he was inflicted with a disease, a very severe disease of boils all over his body, where he found nowhere where he could be comfortable. And the only place he found comfortable was sitting in an old fire pit, the soft ashes that were there, and he used a broken piece of pottery to kind of scrape his skin. So he was just plain miserable. And he didn't know, you know, I mean, his friends told him that he was guilty of sin. They felt like because he had a judgment on him that he was in sin. And he told them that he was innocent of any sin and he was good enough to be accepted by God. And he wished he could argue with God about his circumstances. But then Job, as we've moved along, has started to see that God was in control of his circumstances, and his heart started to soften, and he realized he was not as good as he thought he is. But he doesn't understand why God has let this happen to him still. But he is seeing that God is sovereign. And as we left off last week, Bildad, in his second dialogue, drove Job to his knees, and Job proclaimed in his statement of faith, "My Redeemer lives," which brought him to salvation. Job, who formerly felt that he could atone for his sins by works, so living righteously and performing blood sacrifices for sins and the sins of his family, became a man like the Pharisee Nicodemus and has come full circle. Salvation by faith. Hebrew 11 says, "By faith the men of old gained approval." And Job was certainly one of them. And without faith it is impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. Now this is Zophar's final stab at Job. And when Zophar speaks of the wicked, he is insinuating that Job is a wicked man. Remember, Zophar is a legalist, and he thinks Job cannot receive grace from God, and that Job has to pay for his crimes. And Zophar the Naamite answered, "Therefore," if you're trying to follow along, I am in Job chapter 20. "Therefore, my disquieting thoughts make me respond, even because of my inward agitation. I listen to the reproof which insults me, and the spirit of my understanding makes me answer, 'Do you know this from of old, from the establishment of man on earth, that the triumphing of the wicked is short and the joy of the godless momentary?'" Zophar is telling Job that he is a dead man, that Job can say what he wants, but Job's sin has sealed his fate and it won't be long before he's gone. I personally think Zophar is a snowflake. But I think he's more of an eloquent one. And Zophar continues, "Though his loftiness reaches the heavens, and his head touches the clouds, he perishes forever like his refuse. Those who have seen him will say, 'Where is he?' He flies away like a dream, and they cannot find him. Even like a vision of the light, he is chased away. The eye which saw him sees him no longer, and his place no longer beholds him. His sons favor the poor, and his hands give back his wealth. He says, don't be so prideful about what you've done, Job. You still are going to be like garbage tossed away forever. A godless man like you will be forgotten, and your children have paid you your debts. And Zophar continues, his bones are full of youthful vigor, but it lies down with him in the dust. Though evil is sweet in his mouth, and he hides it under his tongue, though he desires it and will not let go, but holds it in his mouth. Yet his food in his stomach is changed to the venom of cobras within him. He swallows riches, but will vomit them up. God will expel them from his belly. He returns what he has attained and cannot swallow it. As to the riches of his trading, he cannot even enjoy them. For he has oppressed and forsaken the poor. He has seized a house which he has not built. Because he knew no quiet within him, he does not retain anything he desires. Nothing remains for him to devour. Therefore, his prosperity does not endure. In the fullness of the plenty, he will be trampled. The hand of everyone who suffers will come against him. Zophar is saying, Job, you have gained your wealth by crooked means, and God will make sure that you won't keep them. You oppress poor people by seizing their homes by usury. To you, it was the thrill of the business deal, and not just because you wanted to make money. At the pinnacle of your career, you became bankrupt because you were judged because of your sin, and now those people who you swindled are going to make you pay. Zophar continues, when he fills his belly, God will send forth his fierce anger on him and will rain it on him while he is eating. He may flee from the iron weapon, but the bronze bow will pierce him. It is drawn forth and comes out his back, even the glittering point from his gall. Terrors come upon him. Complete darkness is held in reserve for his treasures. An unfanned fire will devour him. It will consume the survivor of his tent. So Zophar says, when a wicked man thinks he is about satisfied with his life, God will rain judgment on him. And maybe he can avoid one tragic trauma, but the next one will be much worse. Fire will consume your livelihood, Job. And he's making reference to his livestock. And cause extreme hardship for your survivor. That's Mrs. Job. Remember, she's went through this whole thing just like Job did. Zophar is using these tragic afflictions Job went through as evidence for Job's guilt. And he continues, the heavens will reveal his iniquity, and the earth will rise up against him. The increase of his house will depart. His possessions will flow away in the day of his anger. This is the wicked man's portion from God, even the heritage decreed to him by God. He says, all that has happened to you, Job, is because of your sin. It wouldn't have happened for any other reason. There is no doubt God is mad at you, and you deserve everything you get. But there is no doubt that Job is a changed man. Let's listen to his reply to Zophar. You can hear the difference in the way he speaks to him. Then Job answered, listen carefully to my speech, and let this be your way of consolation. Bear with me that I may speak. Then after I have spoken, you may mock. As for me, is my complaint to man? And why should I be impatient? Look at me and be astonished, and put your hand over your mouth. Even when I remember, I am disturbed, and horror takes hold of my flesh. Why do the wicked still live, continue on, and also become very powerful? Their descendants are established with them in their sight, and their offspring before their eyes. Their houses are safe from fear, and the rod of God is not on them. His ox mates without fail, his cows calve and does not abort. They send forth their little ones like a flock, and their children skip about. They spend their days in prosperity, and suddenly they go to the grave. Job says, comfort me in my grief by simply listening to me. When I'm done talking, you can ridicule me all you want. My argument isn't with man, but with God, because I don't understand what he's doing. You're going to be shocked at what I'm about to say, and I'm disturbed and afraid even by my own thoughts. Why do the wicked prosper and live a full life? Their children grow up like them and seem happy. They don't worry about calamities in their home, and God never seems to judge them. Their investments pay off very well. They live at ease their whole life, and in death they pass away comfortably. And Job continues, they say to God, depart from us. We do not even desire the knowledge of your ways. Who is the Almighty that we should serve him? And what would we gain if we entreat him? However, how often have you ever tried to talk about spiritual things with an unbelieving friend or relative, only to be told that God is a myth and they want nothing to do with religion, especially your religion? How about when they say, I won't go to church because there are too many hypocrites there and all they want is my money? If God is real, why doesn't he do something about all the sickness, pain, and evil in this world? In John 15, Jesus says, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, because of this the world hates you. A slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they would keep yours also. Job continues, but the prosperity is not their own doing. The counsel of the wicked is far from me. How often does the wicked's calamity fall on them? Does God apportion destruction in his anger? Are they as straw before the wind and like chaff which the storm carries away? He says the wicked does not prosper on their own, and I don't listen to their advice. They do not seem to be affected by adversity of any kind, and when hard times come, they are like leaves in the grass blowing in the wind. They just go with the flow. And Job continues, you say God stores away a man's iniquity for his sons. Let God repay him so that he may know it. Let his own eyes see his decay, and let him drink the wrath of the Almighty. For what does he care for his household after him, when the number of his months is cut off? Can anyone teach God knowledge in that he judges those on high? Zophar, you say God holds a wicked man's sons accountable for his sins. But I say let God hold that wicked man accountable so that he understand what he has done wrong. Let that man see the mess that he's made of his own life, and let him experience God's judgment. If he isn't judged for his sins, why should he care if his children are judged for him if he's dead? You cannot teach God anything new, because his wisdom is above the wisdom of the wise men of this world. And Job continues, one dies in his full strength, being wholly at ease and satisfied, while another dies with a bitter soul, never even tasting anything good. Together they lie down in the dust, and worms cover them. So he's saying the one with the most toys still dies, and the man with nothing passes away as well. In the end, their outcome is the same. And Job continues, behold, I know your thoughts, and the plans by which you would wrong me. For you say, where is the house of the nobleman, and where is the tent, the dwelling place of the wicked? Have you not asked wayfaring men, and do you not recognize their witness? For the wicked is reserved for the day of calamity, and they will be led forth in the day of fury. who will confront them with his actions, and who will repay him for what he has done? While he is carried to the grave, men will keep watch over his tomb. How then will you vainly comfort me? For your answers remain full of falsehood. He says, I know you guys are what you guys are thinking. You're going to tell me stories of wicked rich men who lost everything. Ask men who live on the street. Does it pay to be good? Or do evil men get away with wicked schemes? The wicked will be judged at the end when all wicked men will be judged by God, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. No one tries to rebuke those who are powerful and prosperous. They seem to get away with behavior that is unacceptable for anyone else. You are my friend. You, my friends, say that if you're prospering, you're righteous, and if you're suffering, you're wicked. That is not the way it works. Then Eliphaz the Temanite responded. Now remember, Eliphaz is relying on his experiences to describe Job's issues and what the nature of God is like. Can a vigorous man be of use to God? Is there any pleasure to the Almighty if you are righteous? Is it because of your reverence that he reproves you, that he enters into judgment against you? Is not your wickedness great and your iniquities without end? He's saying to Job, can a man be useful to God? Do you think he pleases God that you are claiming to be righteous? Is it because you are pious that God is showing you what a hypocrite you are? Are you not the world's greatest sinner? Eliphaz is still not listening to Job. To him, Job's testimony is worthless. He continues to try to convict Job of some unknown sin, and Job has committed. And in the following verses, he is either making up stories of incredibly unethical business practices, or he's repeating the rambling gossip of jealous neighbors. We know that it is not true because we saw the beginning of this saga from heaven's point of view in the first two chapters. And Eliphaz continues, for you have taken pledges of your brothers without cause and stripped men naked. To the weary you have given no water to drink, and from the hungry you have withheld bread. You have sent widows away empty, and the strength of the orphans have been crushed. Therefore snares surround you, and sudden dread terrifies you. O darkness, so that you cannot see, and the abundance of water covers you. Is not God in the height of heavens? Look also at the distant stars. How high are they? Eliphaz is saying, Job, you have locked men in untenable contracts and put the screws to them until they had nothing left. You haven't provided for those people who depended upon you, and you sent widows and orphans away without enough to eat. And just as Noah hidden in the ark during the diluvium judgment, so you are living in your judgment. God is found in the distant heaven, even above the stars. And Eliphaz continues, you say, what does God know? Can he judge through the thick darkness? Clouds are a hiding place for him, so that he cannot see, and he walks in the vault of heaven. Job, you say God does not know what goes on down here. He can't see through the clouds, and he is too far away. Actually, Job never said that, and I know that because I have a Bible search engine. Will you keep to the ancient path which wicked men have trod, who were snatched away before their time, whose foundation was swept away with the flood? Job, will you be like those ancient men that were swept away in the flood because they refused to repent of their sin? And Eliphaz continues, the wicked said to God, depart from us, and what can the Almighty do to them? Yet he fills their houses with good things, but the counsel of the wicked is far from us. The wicked says, I don't want God around. What can he do for me, and I haven't done for myself? God blesses those people anyway, and he fills their house with things, even though they don't appreciate it. Matthew 5 says, He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Eliphaz continues, "The righteous see it and are glad, and the innocent laugh at them, saying, 'Surely our adversaries are cut down, and the fire consumes their remnant. Now acquaint yourself with him and be at peace. Therefore good will come to you. Please receive instruction from his mouth and establish the words in your heart. If you return to the Almighty, you will be restored. If you remove unrighteousness far from your tent.'" He says, "The righteous will continue, but the wicked will be consumed. Acquaint yourself with God and you will be at peace. Receive instruction from his mouth and memorize his word. If you return to God, you will be restored. If you remove unrighteousness from your home." Hearing Eliphaz is like arguing with the people of the door-to-door cults. No matter what you say to them about the deception that they have been brainwashed with, they barely acknowledge what you say and insist that theirs is the way you need to follow. Eliphaz continues, "When the mighty will be your gold and choice silver to you, for then you will delight in the Almighty and lift up your face to God. You will pray to him and he will hear you. You will pay your vows. You will also decree a thing and it will be established before you, and light will shine on your ways. When you are cast down, you speak with confidence, and the humble person he will save. He will deliver one who is not innocent, and he will be delivered through the cleanliness of your hands." Eliphaz extends a great invitation, but unfortunately it no longer applies to Job. Eliphaz ends this by saying, "God will use you if you get right and open your heart." And Job replied, "Even today my complaint is rebellion. His hand is heavy despite my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would learn the words which he would answer and perceive what he would say to me. Would he contend with me by the greatness of his power? No, surely he would pay attention to me. There the upright would reason with him, and I would be delivered from my judge." Right now, in the case of God versus Satan, Job is not the defense attorney like he's claiming to be. He's the star witness. "Behold, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he acts on the left, I cannot behold him. He turns on the right, I cannot see him. But he knows the way I take, and when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held fast to his path, and I have kept his way and not turned aside. I have not departed from the commandment of his lips, and I have treasured the words of his mouth more than the necessary food." Job continues to amaze me. His answers and complaints are humbler now, and he's no longer trying to force God into answering for the trials that he has laid on Job. Remember, God allowed Satan to do these things. And this makes God responsible but not answerable for those trials. He still thinks he's innocent, and that's the part that really bothers Job's friends. God still seems hard to reach. But the outcome of the meeting with God, Job would learn and not just listen to what God has to say to him. His demeanor is no longer, "God and I are at odds with each other, but we have a relationship, and he's the boss." Job continues, "But he is unique, and who can turn him? And what his soul desires that he does. For he performs what is appointed for me, and many such decrees are with him." In Acts 10, Peter says, "I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality, but in every nation, the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome to him." Some versions say that God is no respecter of persons, rather than God is not one to show partiality. I personally think that "not one to show partiality" is kind of weak when describing God's nature, and no respecter of persons is kind of strong when describing it as well. The real point here is that he loves us and works in each of our lives as he knows best. I have come to realize that if I have the faith enough to move a mountain from his place, he has the right to veto my request because he is in charge. It's not that my faith is absent or weak. It's because I will turn to him. I will trust him to do the right thing, even though I personally don't like what he does. His answers to me when I have prayed to him in the past have been yes, no, wait. My grace is sufficient for you. Do you trust me? And he's also led me to specific verses to think on. Job continues, therefore I would be dismayed at his presence when I consider I am terrified of him. It is God who has made my heart faint, in the Almighty who has dismayed me. But I am not silenced by the darkness, nor deep gloom which covers me. Why are not times of judgment kept by the Almighty? Why must those who know him look in vain for such days? Job says, since God delays the times of the wicked men's judgment, why must his people wait forever for God to act? The next few verses will be about injustices of the wicked in rural areas. Some wicked remove the landmarks. They seize and devour flocks. They drive away the donkeys of orphans. They take the widow's ox for a pledge. They push the needy aside from the road, and the poor of the land are made to hide themselves altogether. Like wild donkeys in the desert, the poor go about their labor foraging for food. The desert wilderness provides food for their children, and they harvest their fodder in the field and glean the vineyard of the wicked. Job says, wicked men move property lines and eat stolen sheep. They rip off widows and orphans. They ignore the needs of the extremely poor. The poor are made to hide and live apart from everybody else. And the poor forage for food wherever they can get it, even in the desert. Consider the story of Ruth, a foreign woman from a country despised by the Israelites because the Moabites oppressed Israel in the past and were considered unclean Gentiles. Ruth had to find food for herself and her mother-in-law by searching the harvested fields for the grain that was dropped during harvest while enduring treatment from other workers in the field. Mistreatment from other workers in the field. Job continues, they caused the poor to go about naked without clothing and have no shelters against the cold. They are wet with the mountain rains and hug the rock for want of shelter. The fatherless child is snatched from its mother, and the infant of the poor is seized for a debt. He says the poor are put in positions of indentured servanthood. When they cannot pay their debts, their children are taken and made slaves, like enslaved sharecroppers from our post-Civil War era. And they take away the sheaves from the hungry, and they press out the olive oil between the rows of olive trees and tread the winepress while they are thirsty. Job says, not only are the poor not given a fair wage for their labor, but wicked employers don't allow their workers a handful of grain from the harvest, nor do they allow them olive oil for their lunch or grape juice when they're thirsty. In 1 Timothy, it quotes the Old Testament, says, you cannot muzzle the ox while he is threshing, and the laborer is worthy of his wages. And Job continues, from the city men groan, and the souls of the wounded cry out, yet God does not pay attention to folly. Others have been with those who rebel against the light. They do not want to know the way nor abide in its paths. The murderer rises at dawn and kills the poor and needy, and at night he is as a thief. The eye of the adulterer waits for twilight, saying, no eye will see me. and he disguises his face. In the dark, they dig into houses and they mark for themselves in the daytime. He is swift as the waters. Their portion is cursed on the earth, and they do not turn toward the vineyards. He wrongs the barren woman and does no good for the widow. Job says, in cities, men get beat up, but God does not pay attention. The wicked in the city neither walk in the light nor do what's right. The murderer never ceases to ruin and take the lives of the poor and needy. The adulterer shifts eyes so that no one can see his lascivious look. He waits until the sun goes down to satisfy his lust. The robber searches through houses at night that was cased out during the day. Their thievery is done quick and stealthily. They're a hated lot that make their living off the backs of others' labor. 2 Timothy speaks of wicked men who are self-centered, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure. Among them are those who enter into the households and captivate weak women, weighed down with sins that are led on by various impulses. Job continues, drought and heat consume the snow waters. So does Sheol, those who have sinned. A mother will forget them. The worm feeds sweetly until he is no longer remembered. He says, may these evil men disappear in the grave and be remembered like melting snow. And he continues, they are exalted a little while, then they are gone. Even like the heads of grain, they are cut off. Now, if this is not so, who can prove me a liar and make my speech worthless? Who among us wouldn't agree that there are evil people in the country as well as the city? Something is happening to Job that is commendable, though. He is not simply focused on himself. Job is now displaying a concern for others. He's not just focusing on his own issues, even though they are extremely severe. Real salvation does that for a man. Then Bildad the Shuhite answered, dominion and awe belong to him who establishes peace in the heights. Is there any number of his troops, and upon whom does his light not arise? He says, God is in control. Can anyone number the hosts of heaven? Is there anyone that his light does not shine on? And he continues, how then can a man be just with God? Or how can he be clean who is born of woman? Bildad borrows this from Eliphaz in Job chapter 4. Can mankind be just before God? Can a man be pure before his maker? None of Job's friends know, but Job knows. His Redeemer lives. Now, I want to be real about Redeemer. Job and most of the Old Testament saints have a small difference in their understanding of what Redeemer is. Their Redeemer is a Goel, or a kinsman Redeemer. This person is the closest next of kin that has voluntary obligation to literally bail a person out of a financial problem by paying restitution for a parcel of property or marrying the widow of a deceased kin, especially a brother, in order to raise up children in that brother's name. In some cases, a Goel Hadam was called on to avenge the accidental death of a relative. In the book of Ruth, Boaz fulfilled both redemption for the land and marriage in one of the greatest love stories ever told. He became a type of Christ, which is a person whose life becomes a living allegory of Jesus Christ. Our Savior, by his death and resurrection, paid total restitution for our lives and has become the bridegroom in the grandest wedding in the universe we'll ever know, and will put to death our enemy that has stolen our lives from us. Bildad ends his dialogue with Job in the next two verses. and you're not going to like it. If even the moon has no brightness and the stars are not pure in his sight, how much less man, that maggot, and the son of man, that worm? Bildad says, even the moon and the stars are pure in God's sight. So how can a maggot like you ever be saved? What a guy. He's not speaking on behalf of God, for the ministry of the Holy Spirit is to comfort, strengthen, edify, and heal. Then Job responded, what a help you are to the weak. How you have saved the arm without strength. What counsel you have given to one without wisdom. What helpful insight you have abundantly provided. To whom have you uttered these words? And whose spirit was expressed through you? That's a great question. Whose spirit was expressed through you? We know from the beginning that Satan's desire is to destroy Job, but sometimes well-meaning people speak from prideful or uninformed, biased viewpoints. Job continues, the departed spirits tremble under the waters and their inhabitants. Naked is Sheol before him, and abandoned has no covering. He says, the dead of the sea are in deep anguish. Those in the sea are held there for judgment. In Revelation 20, it says, and the sea gave up its dead, which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every one of them according to their deeds. He says, hell is bare before God, and the abyss, or bottomless pit, is not hidden from God. And Job continues, he stretches out the north over the empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. He wraps up the waters in his clouds, and the cloud does not burst under him. He has inscribed a circle on the surface of the waters in the boundary of light and darkness. He says, long before the legends of earth being resting on the backs of Atlas, elephants, and turtles, or a flat earth, men knew that the earth was not resting on any fictional foundation, but it was hung on nothing, held between the gravity of the sun and the centrifugal force as it rotated around it, and that clouds are capable of supporting millions of tons of water. And Job continues, the pillar of heaven tremble and are amazed at his rebuke. He quieted the sea with his power, and his understanding he shattered Rahab. By his breath the heavens are cleared. His hand has pierced the fleeing serpent. Behold, these are the fringes of his ways, and how faint a word we hear from him. But his mighty thunder, who can understand it? Job says, Bildad, you talk about God being awesome. I know that because we have never seen or have no idea the extent or limit of his power. Can you understand him when he thunders? In Revelation 6, it says, and a loud voice came out of the temple from the throne, saying, it is done. And there were flashes of lightning and sounds and peals of thunder, and there was a great earthquake, such as there had not been since man came to be on the earth. So great an earthquake was it, and so mighty. Job is going to go on in the next few chapters to justify himself further. Job's part in this whole thing, he is the most lengthy talker of all his friends, by far. And he's not going to get in the last word, because God is going to put an end to this conversation. Praise God. And we're going to have to wait for next week to go on.